I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. An article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Monday caught my eye. For UW Waukesha professor, teaching math is an art form. And it's an extraordinary article about math anxiety, which so many of us face, and also a really extraordinary teacher. So extraordinary, actually. She's going to be honored this Friday by the UW System Board of Regents with one of three annual Regents Teaching Excellence Awards. She has some unusual ways for getting people to feel comfortable with math, and she believes that all students can do math. And we're going to be speaking with her for a good chunk of this hour. Professor Shubhangi Stalder is a full professor of math at the University of Wisconsin Waukesha. She has received doctoral degrees in math from UW Milwaukee, and she has decades of teaching experience. Her focus has always been to those who are struggling with math, who freeze when it comes to math. And there are so many of us, I include myself in that group as well. It just can be very, very hard. I love the article. It really captured the essence of the program and the essence of who she is, because it ends with this. She received the award because of letters of recommendation from students and from people who are colleagues of hers. And the chair of the math department at UWM recalls seeing Stalder on the final day of spring classes last May. I was coming back to my department late in the afternoon, the way the article ends. He wrote this in a letter of recommendation. She was on the elevator, and her cart was literally overflowing with bouquets of flowers, a cake, and numerous other tokens of appreciation from her students for her efforts in helping them succeed at mathematics. I have never witnessed anything like this in my life, an outpouring of true gratitude to an individual who inhabited not only the role of teacher for those students, but also of spirit guide. And later in the hour, we'll be speaking with Professor Paul Martin, who's a professor at the University of Wisconsin Marathon, and he teaches math as well. He has received teaching awards over his career, and he and Professor Stalder have put together this guide, study guide, workbook, textbook, but it's not a traditional kind of textbook for how students with math anxiety can overcome that. So we'll be adding him to the conversation in a moment. We welcome your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and the email is talk@wpr.org. Professor Stalder, congratulations, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, and it's an honor to be here.
Thank you.
I've always heard you on the radio, and now I get to meet you. It's wonderful.
And now I get to meet you and learn about you, which is also wonderful. Really, I just thought this article was so, because maybe it spoke to me because I suffer from that as well and just caught a break so I didn't have to study math further. But I found it really interesting, the many facets of your life that it captured as well. But you really have a way to getting to students. And there must be so many of them, Professor Stalder, who freeze when it comes to math, who just feel like they just can't do it, they don't get it. And you have found a way to make them successful. I think that's extraordinary.
Thank you. I think one of the biggest reasons students do not pass mathematics courses is past experiences. We carry a lot of baggage from our past experiences. If people have not succeeded in mathematics, and now they have to learn the same thing over and over again, it's extremely difficult to overcome that. So when you teach and you go to class and you see students who really don't want to be there, they're kind of forced to be there because it's a requirement for their degrees, but they're very afraid. They're not just afraid, but they're lacking some skills. And so if that is the case, it's very hard to teach them to succeed. And so we originally started the project because we wanted to fix our pass rates in college algebra, which is the first credit-bearing university course that students have to take. And we quickly realized that we had to start at the bottom. So the course that we teach assumes nothing. We start in kindergarten. We start with counting, and we walk our way up. And the way we've done that is to reorganize the content in such a way that when they learn how to add like 2 plus 2, at the same time we show them how to add 2x plus 2x, which becomes like, oh, it's the same thing. So it's not anything complicated. So we can include higher level mathematics and show them how it's connected to what they learned in kindergarten or first grade.
Fascinating. And give us some statistics. There are a huge number of young people who need to get that math requirement and need to be in developmental math courses their freshman year because they're not ready for math, right? It's a huge percentage.
It is a huge percentage.
Why? What happened along the way?
Well, for some people, or for a lot of people, they haven't taken any math in their last year of high school. And as we know, our brains are very efficient. So if we haven't used something for a whole year, we're not going to remember what it is a year later. Mm-hmm. So if you forget some of the basics, mathematics is a sequential learning subject. So if you do not have the bottom rungs of the ladder, you can't really climb back up. And so for most people, it's really a refresher. We also get a lot of adult students who have had many years of break, 5, 10, 15 years break, and they come back. And then for them, not just past baggage, but also forgetting so much of the stuff they already learned. So for a lot of them, just reviewing and overcoming their barriers just creates an environment for success.
And you also, I understand, do some unusual things. You have people concentrate on their breathing and teach them relaxation techniques because this anxiety really has a physical manifestation.
Absolutely. Any anxiety. Anybody who has suffered from anxiety can tell you breathing is the first thing to leave you. Breathing becomes shallow. People, how they sit, they'll slump in their chairs, the look on their face. You can just immediately tell that that person is really not here. Present. Mm-hmm. And our lives are complicated. Many students, if you look, even if you give a 30-second break, they'll immediately go after their cell phones. So they're distracted. And so mindfulness is a wonderful practice to show students how mindfulness can bring them back, bring them their focus, bring them connected to their bodies. Anytime we have an emotional response, there are two things that create that. That's what my mindfulness teacher always taught me how. One of them is a thought. We cannot control what thoughts come into our head, but the second component is a body component. So any stress reaction, some people have sweaty palms, some people, their breath gets affected, some people have digestive disorders. And so all of that can be controlled just by simply observation. I know it sounds, how can it be so simple? Everybody would be doing it. But I think if you really tried and paused even for a breath or two when you're anxious and just take 3 breaths, you will realize that, you know what, it's not as bad. My arms are here. My legs are here. So it could be worse things that have happened to you. So in any one given moment, we think our life is linear, but it really is more spherical. Right? Lots of interesting things are happening to us in the same moment. And so if you just look back and become mindful of your breath, just mindful and accept the feelings that you're having, and that usually when we are anxious, we try to get rid of them. We want to just feel better immediately. But if you just pay attention, say, you know what, it's okay to be feeling what you're feeling right now. It's not the end of the world. Suddenly things look different. Mm-hmm. And so breathing, diaphragmatic breathing is one of the things. If you look, just even normal breathing is affected for students. They don't breathe properly. A lot of people don't breathe properly. So when you inhale, your stomach should be expanding. When you exhale, stomach falls back. And a lot of people actually do the opposite, which creates more stress.
Right. And if you're stressed like that, this is a simple thing to say, but it's so true. You don't remember as much. Your mind isn't there as much. If you're in that kind of anxiety,
that's right.
You need to be relaxed to remember history, to remember what you read, all of that, right?
Absolutely. And whenever there is a lot of biology behind it, and I will not get the right chemicals here, and biologists can probably add more to it, but when we're stressed, our brain releases chemicals that actually put up barriers because we are ready to run. You know, it's flight or freeze response is what's coming into our bodies, which served us well, but it doesn't serve us well now when we actually need our higher level thinking process. Mm-hmm. So in mathematics, higher level thinking process is what's getting you through problems. And when you get stressed out, that's the first thing to leave you. And so a lot of people, even when you started the show, you said how you were not good at mathematics. When people say that, I think I would like people to take a pause and not say that. Because how do you know you're not good at mathematics? Most people base that on the exam scores they got, right? Just because somebody got a bad exam score doesn't mean they're not good at something. It simply means that in that moment in time, they got frozen, something happened to them, and they couldn't perform. Now, it is possible that they didn't learn the material and couldn't do it. But that doesn't mean they're not good at something. So I think we very easily just accept, oh, I'm bad at mathematics. That's, I think, a very bad precedent to set, especially for younger people, when they see everyone around them saying it's acceptable to be bad at mathematics.
Yeah.
It sets the whole community then starts saying it's acceptable. But if somebody said, I can't read, then you'll be like, oh, no, let me help you.
Yeah, how true. How true. Well, when you talk about it being sequential, I think there's a lot of truth to that, that if you, I had a year interrupted and people were doing algebra and I had no idea what it was and I never caught up. So you get anxious because you're not where a class is and then you can fall back and fall back and fall back.
Right.
But you as a teacher mark those students and say, I'll help you, or there are ways to get you caught up with where your mind could be on this
Absolutely.
Subject.
I think in classroom, I mean, the content is set up so that we're starting at the bottom and climbing our way up. And so it's set up, we have four modules starting with just vocabulary, because mathematics is a language that you are using to communicate with people. If you don't know the vocabulary, you can't really talk to people. Right. And so I think also how usual classes are set up is teacher comes in, delivers the content, we do some problems, then the students go home, they sit down to do their homework, and they're like, don't know, I didn't really understand it. But in the 15 weeks, you have to cover so much material. So when they come back, only a little bit of time is spent, you know, helping them figure out what they were stuck on. But now they're already behind and they haven't done their homework, they haven't caught up. And then that's a vicious cycle, because then a person who is backlogged just over and over and over again, after a point, they can't catch up, you know? But in our case, we have a flipped classroom, so they listen to lectures at home. And so in the classroom, all we do is problem solving. So we can see where they're getting stuck, and we can not just, I think one of the biggest things that mathematicians might do in order to help people is to show them how to do the problem. But what we're trying to do is more than that. We're not just trying to show them the content. We're saying, you know what? You know how to do this. So why don't you pause and see what your brain is doing? Even if it's wrong, attempt something. You want to attempt, because unless you attempt, you don't know what your reasoning process was. Mm-hmm. A lot of students say, I don't know. That's why I'm here. I'm asking you because I don't know. But if you just go at it and give them the confidence that, you know what? The worst thing that will happen to you is that you have a wrong answer. Mistakes are very, very important to make in mathematics. I know it sounds, a teacher saying it's okay to make mistakes sounds funny, but it's important to make mistakes, because making mistakes and understanding why you made the mistakes allows you to proceed forward and learn more and more and more. And so, in fact, if you look at the history of mathematics, there are many different fields of mathematics that came into existence because people made mistakes.
Fascinating, right? And if you don't mind sharing a little bit about you as a student, let's do that, because here you are receiving this award. And my understanding is that you much preferred swimming to studying when you were a young person in India. Am I correct? It was in the paper, so I figured I could bring it up.
Yes, I was not a very good student, and I understand exactly where some of the students come from, because I did not get very good grades, and a lot of people around me said I was not going to amount to anything.
Oh.
I was dumb. I was stupid.
Oh.
So I don't mind saying this. I think sometimes it's helped people see, so if I can do it, anybody can do it. And the person that is most important to me is my mother. My mother always said that if you want something, you just have to work hard at it and figure out how to get there. So I really did know that it was not something I wanted. I really was most focused as an athlete, and so studying didn't come so easily to me. And then even once I did focus on studying, I realized that the anxiety really got the better of me. And so over time, a lot of my teachers have helped me. And I think, so all the, for each one of us who has a career, you can probably say that somebody in your life, teachers, parents,
yes,
allowed you to proceed forward. Nobody accomplishes anything on their own. Colleagues.
Yes.
And so I think it's very important for people to realize it's okay to say I'm not good at something and get help, you know. And so, yes, I was not a very good student, but if I figured it out, then I know that each one of my students can figure it out. It may be a different path, you know, it may take longer, it may not be as fast as they wanted. So there's a lot of crying and stress involved, but they can get past it. Everybody can get past it.
Well, I was so struck by the last paragraph in the aforementioned article that your students, you had this whole cart filled with flowers and candy and other tokens of appreciation, which really touched me. I thought, you really have touched people's lives in such an important way. That's a good thing, isn't it?
It is a wonderful thing. I think that that's one of the reasons I love teaching so much, because you can really make a difference and connect with human beings. These are, I think when I teach and when I do my training program with Paul, we always tell people that the most important thing here is to remember that these are human beings. They are not just entities that come into your class, you talk to them and they leave. They have lives outside of the classroom. So just compassion and kindness can go a very long way. There are students' lives, if people really looked at a lot of these developmental students, have very, very hard lives. They are working two jobs, they have families to take care of, and on top of that, they have to learn a subject that they don't like. You know, and so I think you're really making all the circumstances that you can possibly think of to make somebody's life difficult are all present in that classroom. And so if you can do, sometimes it's simple thing as listening to somebody. Somebody's parent died, somebody's grandparent died. This was somebody important to them. And to tell them, you know what, sorry, you can't take an exam. I think that's not how I work.
Right.
And so just sure connecting students on the human level, it's so important for a teacher.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we're going to meet Paul momentarily. We're talking about teaching mathematics, and with a woman who you can tell just from listening to her for a few minutes is an extraordinary teacher in person. She is a full professor of mathematics at the University of Wisconsin, Waukesha. She is originally from India, where she has admitted on the air that she wasn't a very good student, and look where she is now. She is receiving an award this Friday, UW System Board of Regents, one of three annual Regents Teaching Excellence Rewards, and she believes that all students can do math, and she also has, along with her colleague Paul Martin of UW Marathon County, who was among those who nominated her for the award, developed a very successful course, and we'll talk about the course that they developed, and it has allowed so many freshmen, and there are many of them, 36% of freshmen require developmental math to prepare them for college-level math, and what they have come up with has prepared so many students. Their success rate is phenomenal, and so are their good hearts, because I also learned in this article that I believe it was McGraw-Hill offered to pay them money and for this program, and they said, no, they believe that it should be free. That's something, huh? Here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. We're on Facebook as well, and that is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Shubhangi Stalder is our guest, and we'll be with you and with Professor Martin in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining our program now, along with our guest who's receiving the award, Professor Stalder, is Professor Paul Martin. He's at the University of Wisconsin Marathon, and he has also decades of teaching experience. His focus has been helping his students see how math connects to the real world. And he does it through building three-dimensional models, modeling physical processes like heat loss through the attic of a house, to connecting math to his students' other classes, from chemistry to music. He has received several teaching awards over his career. And he and Professor Stalder have come up with a course that has allowed so many students begin to see that they can do math and fulfill the requirements, college requirements. Dr. Martin, thank you very much for being with us on the air as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have both of you here. Hey, why don't you talk about the way that you and Professor Stalder teach this class? Because what's amazing about it is you have been extraordinarily successful. So many students just couldn't get through math, and many of them couldn't get through college. As a result of that, what have you done differently? What have the two of you put together?
I think the main thing is to build a foundation on reasoning. I know that even for myself, when I was in maybe one graduate course in graduate school, at some point in the semester, I started not fully understanding what was going on and maybe just memorized a few things as a recipe. Once that happens, you're gone. It just becomes totally uninteresting. And so I think we've tried to build upon reasoning and understanding why things work the way they are. Even with adding fractions, as simple as adding fractions, why do you get a common denominator when you add two fractions? So we try to build things upon very basic foundations that people can reason and understand rather than memorize recipes.
Mm-hmm. And when you talked about a flipped classroom, can you explain more, Dr. Stalder, what that means? You see the material first and then ask questions? Or?
Yes, so traditionally you go to a class and what happens is the teacher gives you a lecture, then you go home, you do problems. But we found that a class time is better in use if we can help the students solve the problems. So we have flipped classroom simply means that students watch lectures at home and they do their homework in the classroom. So they watch, we did, and we also noticed that students have low attention span. So instead of a 50-minute lecture or hour 40-minute lecture, it is short segments, so 10 or 15-minute
really?
Long.
Yes.
So 10 or 15-minute long segments at the end of which there is a summary and they have to attempt the problems. And then there is also a sheet in the workbook where they can write down where in the lecture they had difficulties understanding some of the content, what gave them trouble, so that when they come to class, we address just the difficulties. That allows a lot of free time in the class to address individual different needs so that it's not just mass learning, it's really customized learning for each student. If a student struggles, they can watch the video over and over again without having to, you know, look like they are having problems in front of everybody else. It's hard to raise your hand in front of like 30 students and say, can you please repeat what you just said?
Sure.
I don't understand. That takes a lot more courage. But at home, you can rewind. Nobody's going to know how many times you had to watch the lecture. And so it makes it easier for students to come to the same level. So when they're in the classroom, everybody's at the same level.
Mm-hmm. And what are the keys, do you think, Professor Martin, to your remarkable success here? Is it the flipped classroom? Is it getting rid of anxiety when it comes to math? Or is there another element or elements?
I think that we give all the opportunities possible. We're trying to get people through this and to understand the material, and we give them lots of opportunities with the flipped classroom, and they can retake exams. If they don't get the score they want, they can take it again as long as they can demonstrate that they know material. But I think the personal interaction and the personal attention that they get goes a long way, and I think Shubhangi is especially successful at that.
Yeah, I think she is very successful at that. And tell me a little bit about the kind of material that you're covering. What is it?
Basically K through 12 mathematics.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
15 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
So
all those years into...
So that's the easiest way to say what it is. But it's basically looking at numbers, polynomials, functions, all the different things that you will see in Algebra 1 and Algebra 2 in high school. And also, we include a lot of beginnings because some students don't know how to add fractions or how to add just like negative 2 plus 5. So the basics are included in it so that we are not making any assumptions that you know something.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it's like the class that fills in all your holes and then makes you also competent at algebra so that you can take college-level algebra.
Mm-hmm. And Professor Martin, if we took algebra in sophomore year in high school or freshman year in high school, is that material somewhere in the deep recesses of our minds and you can pull it out again somehow?
I would think most of our students have had some level of algebra in high school. I think all of them have had beginning algebra in high school, but they may not have done very well.
I see.
So there's something there, and I think what we're trying to do in this course is we try to tap into that and try to build a little bit more of a solid foundation under that information that they might have, so that they know. Now I know why that works. So we're trying to connect maybe middle school mathematics, arithmetic, with algebra. We're trying to make that solidify that bridge between the two.
Hmm.
And our exercises, a lot of our exercises focus on doing just that.
Right, and I think some of it is also focusing on reading and writing. So we make students vocalize. They have to read. And so a lot of deficiencies, you might hear them reading it incorrectly. So, for example, if you know what exponents are, students will say x3 as opposed to x to the power of 3. Or if it is negative and then 2 to the power 3, they'll say negative 2 to the 3. And they actually, your brain will interpret then exactly what you read. So negative 2 to the third, that would mean negative 2 times negative 2 times negative 2 versus negative of 2 to the third, which is negative sign and then just 2 times 2 times 2. So the answers are very different depending on how you read. And so we focus also not just on the why, but also how to read and how to speak and write correct mathematics.
Ooh, it's quite a course. You're covering a lot of territory. Why should I know math? Why is it important to have that kind of mathematical knowledge as you live?
I think that's a very good question. And Paul actually will do a better job explaining. Why don't you try, Paul?
I will.
Oh, you're going to get the question,
oh,
too.
Yeah. I will answer also, but I know that
okay.
Paul is very good at creating examples of... So, and actually, Paul can talk more, but in our book, we actually have examples. Every single student who leaves class should not feel like, oh, why do I need to take this class? We connect it to cooking, science, you know, physics, chemistry, biology, business. There are applications from all different disciplines just using simple mathematics that they learn so they can see the power of what mathematics is.
Interesting. Paul, you're first.
I think that's important, the use of mathematics. But I think another thing that I the problems that we work at sometimes, especially towards the end of the semester, they might be like a 3 or 4 stage problem where just developing the tenacity to stay with the problem. I mean, each of the steps aren't that difficult, but just developing the tenacity to stay with it and work through that stage, the next stage, and the next stage, that kind of skill is useful anywhere. I mean, even if it's not related to mathematics, just developing those habits is something. I do a lot of applications where, you know, computing demand curves for like an economics type course, or looking at attic insulation levels in your house, what would be the optimal level? So we do these kind of things in our class. I think just developing the discipline to stay with the problem and understand it fully is one of the skills that one really important skill that students develop.
Yes, I understand that. That makes a lot of sense. Add to that, Shivangi.
One of the biggest skills that you may not directly use in your life is problem-solving skills. Mathematics is all about taking a complex problem, bringing it into smaller components. Once you are able to solve each of those components, putting it together, and it has solved the bigger problem. And that skill is very, very useful in your real life, right? You can encounter a problem at work. How do you solve it? If you can't solve a bigger problem, you try it, and that's where the mindfulness comes in. I think mathematics automatically teaches you how to be mindful because you can get overwhelmed with the big picture. You just take parts at a time and then put them all together. So if you're cooking and... We actually have an example like that in our book where you're cooking and a recipe calls for, say, 1.5 cups of flour, and now you accidentally have 2 cups of flour. How would you adjust the rest of the recipe? Now, you can't always do proportions by pulling a paper pencil out. You're not going to solve a math problem, but you might eye it, right? You might say, okay, I had 1.5 cups of flour, and I had 3/4 cup of sugar. So each 1/4 cup of sugar goes with 1/2 cup of flour, and so I just need to add that much more. That's usually how people solve problems in real life without even realizing they just used mathematics. Mm. So we teach students how sometimes you can solve problems visually and not have to write an arithmetic equation and be able to solve, but you just used mathematics, not even knowing that you right. were actually working mathematics problem.
800-486-8655 is our number. Let's take some phone calls for both of you, starting with Kathleen in Madison. Thanks for waiting, Kathleen. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to say, you know, it's wonderful to hear these guys really changing people's lives. I had problems with learning disabilities, and in third grade when I couldn't do multiplication tables even in 3 times the amount of time the other students could, I gave up on myself. And it turned out I'm actually a mathematical musical genius of the sort that is like Beethoven and Bach and stuff. But I didn't figure that out until I got to college, and I had a teacher who just made it clear that I could have success at the at this. And it's just great. You know, I think one of the things that I taught, I'd had students in science, and I would tell them, you know, okay, you're in middle school. If you're doing poorly in math, don't give up on yourself. Your brain doesn't actually finish adolescence until you're like 25 years old. And that's a little bit of what happened with me, is that I learned to use algebra to solve the problems that I couldn't do in third grade. I learned to multiply by using algebra. And by the time I turned 21, my brain just clicked on the math. And now I love math. It's just this beautiful, fun thing to work out problems. And when I come into a work situation and I need to use algebra, I'm like, ooh, cool, I know how to do this. This is fun.
That's just wonderful.
Just changing the narrative for people, just letting them know, hey, you know, you didn't do badly at math because you're bad at math. You just weren't ready, and now your brain grew up, and now right. you're ready, and you can do this.
Right. Yeah.
People need to hear that, and it sounds like you're doing that, so thank you, teachers. It's just wonderful to hear that you guys are working on that so well.
Shivangi.
Yes, I think that her story is one of many, and you can see how she found out on her own that she was really good at mathematics, and I think that's what happens to a lot of her students. They realize, you know what, I wasn't that bad. I'm really actually quite good. One of the things in our courses we realize is that there are students, when you give them an opportunity to explore and play with it, we say, there are a lot of places in the book will say, play, you know, this is playing time, and just to explore what happens. What happens if you change one component of the problem? And what we realized is that students can actually discover many interesting concepts of mathematics on their own. So basically, if they had not been discovered already, then they would have gotten their PhDs. But it's exciting to students that, oh, wow, I discovered something that a mathematician discovered, you know, years ago. So it's wonderful. This story is just
wonderful. I would imagine.
Yeah.
Why is it, do you think, Paul, that we talk more about math anxiety and people can identify that more than, say, I have an anxiety about reading a book, or I have an anxiety about, there are speaking anxieties, but learning an instrument. There's something about math that a lot of people would say, oh, yes, I have that, and they wouldn't say it about other subjects.
That's a good question. Maybe because so many people experience it, it's got a critical mass of people that have experienced that. And maybe it's because math gets more abstract, gets to an abstract level where that disconnect happens. Whereas with reading, once you learn how to read, you know, at a reasonable level, maybe you just self-select to read the stuff that you understand what you're reading pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really sure what the answer to that, but I would guess it has to do with the fact that once you get to algebra, the abstractness loses a lot of people, especially, as the previous caller mentioned, if they're not quite ready for it in high school when they get it.
Yes, you can
it could really
get
have
lost.
Just put them off, and mm-hmm. they won't go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I think, in fact, there's a lot of literature out there that shows that you are fine up until you start learning fractions. Fractions is the one place where mathematics has this jump of abstraction, and if you are missing that component, especially more and more students who use calculators, you're not training your brain to actually reason out the process. And that process is more important than actually being able to do drill and skill stuff.
Hmm.
You know, so, mm-hmm. And I think that not focusing on that process is what causes the first hurdle. Now, once you have that first hurdle, you start not succeeding, and then that feeds into the anxiety and gets worse and worse. So I think right in the middle school somewhere in fourth and fifth grade, most studies show that if you talk to adults who have anxiety, math anxiety, that you can trace it back to fourth, fifth grade, somewhere in the middle school.
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, it might also have something to do with all that's going on in middle school. That's a tough time of life to be alive, right? Mm-hmm. What's happening with your body, and you're more interested right. in crushes that are going on and in figuring out your individuality, and that's a really hard time of life. So mm-hmm. throw in math, and I can see why you might have some problems, right? Yeah. All right, let's go to Laura in, where are you from, Laura?
It's Arpin.
Where is that?
Central Wisconsin in Wood County.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Laura.
So many times I hear parents talk about, you know, their kids reach fourth or fifth grade, and wow, parents can't even help with math anymore. And a couple of years ago, I discovered a program that was put on through the university at Stevens Point and their UW Extension continuing ed program, and it's called Math and Parent Partners. So I enrolled with my fourth grader at the time, and it was all about fractions, decimals, and percentages.
Hmm.
And what was so amazing about it is it had children and parents working together. And it taught us all kinds of things about how to use manipulatives so that we would understand what these kind of abstract fractions and decimals and things really meant. And it taught parents how to be comfortable working with their students. And the Math and Parent Partners program has continued. We've taken the class again. The next time it was on equations and graphing those equations, and they're starting out with kids in fourth grade and older, but I think the real magic of that program is teaching parents not to be afraid, that even if you had difficulty with some of these concepts in school, you know, you can learn right alongside your student, learn how to use manipulatives, and then you can actually be a very important resource for your students. So hopefully by the time they get to college, they won't have to be worrying right. about taking the developmental class. By the time they get there, they'll just be ready for those college courses because they won't be hearing you say, uh-huh. oh, my gosh, it's too hard for me. Yeah. I can't help my kids.
Oh, I think it's terrific that you were doing that. Paul, you want to respond?
It sounds like a nice way to break the cycle of maybe parents have having a bad experience in middle school. That sounds like a wonderful program. I think it'd be good to replicate that across the state.
Right, I'm sure you get that too. I hear that from parents a lot, that math is so differently taught in middle school and elementary school now that they have a very hard time even understanding what it is their sons or daughters are bringing home.
That's true. And what she talked about manipulatives, we use manipulatives in our classes, and there are students who look at them and say, oh, no, that's what we did in third grade.
Huh.
But I think what she said about working with manipulatives and hands-on learners can really pick up mathematical concept by using manipulatives. So I think that's a very important part of any K-12 education, where when you're learning basic mathematics, having something to play with, you can reach population that otherwise you might lose.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I think, and Paul, like Paul said, that program she talked about is something just fantastic. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful. We have many phone calls coming in, so we'll take more phone calls momentarily. We are speaking. We'll put this article on our Facebook page if we haven't done so yet. It was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Monday. It's really inspirational, and it focuses on math anxiety and the extraordinary teaching by one of our guests, actually both of our guests, because they put together a book that has really helped so many young people overcome their fear of math. And one of our guests is receiving a big honor this Friday, the UW System Board of Regents. It's one of the three annual Regents Teaching Excellence Awards. So we have in our studio Professor Shubhangi Stalder, who's a math professor for UW-Waukesha. Professor Paul Martin is a math professor for UW-Marathon County. And they have seen phenomenal success rate with their creation. which is different than many other creations when it comes to teaching math. More from you in a moment. 800-486-8655 is our number. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we'll be back with you in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow, during this time period, Brits and Americans have bickered over whose version of English is superior for generations. Our guest tomorrow says it's part of an ongoing relationship of mutual admiration and antagonism. Aaron Moore will join us, born and raised in the U.S., living in London for the past 8 years, and author of That's Not English, which breaks down the differences between the two countries so that every American can understand the English, and I would imagine the English could understand the Americans. All right, let's go back to phone calls for our wonderful guests, Molly and Eau Claire. Hi, Molly.
Hi, can you hear me, Kathleen?
Yes, Molly, go right ahead.
Okay. I am one of those classic math dummies, and I remember hours spent with my mother trying to get the fundamental concept of fractions. I don't know how many pie pans I looked at, and I couldn't get it. But my question is, I have a son who has learning disabilities, dyslexia, has struggled terribly throughout high school, primarily with algebra. He's taken extended algebra, ACTC algebra. He has tutors. The tutors think he understands, and when they work with him, he takes the test, he fails. How can we get a hold of, how can he work with this program?
Shibangi? Oops, let me get your mic on. Go ahead.
Okay. The book is online, free for anybody to download and use at our website. And so if you just type in one of our names, I think it will show up. It's just developmental and intermediate algebra book. You can also use a program called alex.com. And that's an artificial intelligence software where a student can go in and solve problems. And it will first give you a diagnostic test, and you can figure out what you learned, what you already know. So it will create a map of what you already know, and the only things you have to master is things that you have forgotten or never learned. And they have very good K through 12 mathematics is just amazing on this website. On this program, we use that program as part of supplement, but I think one of the things that we've noticed working with students with learning disabilities is sometimes just having a board space and letting the student take an exam on the board frees up a lot of mental anxiety, and especially people with dyslexia, they can see and process, and you ask them to speak it, and that allows students to figure out what they're writing. Is it the same as what they are seeing in front of their eyes? And so sometimes that helps. And so I think a lot of individual work. But, yes, if you want to use our materials, anybody is welcome to use them. Just download the book. And workbook is also online. And all the videos are embedded in the book. So you just click on it and listen to the lectures.
It's remarkable that you do that for free. And it's STALDER and Martin, MARTIN, if you want to just Google them, Molly.
Could you spell her the S-T?
STALDER.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. Well, I find that extraordinary that you have made this accessible to everybody for free. You had a book publisher come to you and say they were going to pay you money for this, weren't they?
Right. Well, the publisher just would publish our book, and then it would be in bookstores, and students can buy it. And if you look at college textbooks, they are very expensive. Our students' lives are very, very difficult, and to add a $170 book cost to their lives is not something we both wanted to do. So our goal here is to reach the masses and to show them how they actually can do mathematics, that it's not as bad as they might think. And maybe they don't even have to be in college to learn, so they can just download the book and go through it, and they can even use Alex on their own. You don't have to be in college to do any of these things.
I think that's so remarkable you've done that. There aren't many people who would do that. That's good. Thank you, Molly, very much for your call. Wolf is next in Green Bay. Hi, Wolf.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
So I have a question. When my daughter was going through grade school, she'd bring home her math problems, and they would be ridiculously complex. And it's this, I guess it's the new math that they're using nowadays. And I went to college, so... And, you know, I learned in a traditional way. It was all the other students that helped me through it and stuff like that. But I'm looking at these new math problems where, like, she's got, like, 2 + 2, and then she has to write out, like, a half a page worth of stuff. That doesn't make any sense at all. And I was just wondering if the professors thought any of this new math was valid or know why they're using that instead of, you know, the old traditional, let's memorize this and get it done.
Professor Martin.
Writing a half a page as to why what 2 + 2 means, maybe at some level that might be appropriate as to understanding what addition is. I mean, what is 2 + 2? You're combining two groups of, you know, where there's two items. And yeah, I don't think that I would expect to have too much homework along those lines, but somewhat more multi-step problems, more than just 3 × 7, 7 × 8. I mean, I think if you look at my kids were little, I used some Singapore materials for learning mathematics, and one of the things that separated their materials from some of the materials that we use here is the level of the problems, that they were multi-step problems. So I'm not saying that writing a paragraph on 2 + 2 is really that, maybe all that useful. I'm not sure. Maybe in some situations that's appropriate. But the having multi-level problems is one of the places where U.S. students tend to lag behind other countries in international, you know, math tests. So I'm not that familiar with the materials they're talking about, but
maybe he should explore something that he can do with his daughter that would make sense to him and would make sense to her and still would be valuable, right? Like your workbook. Why not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think without knowing what program they're actually using, it's hard to comment, because sometimes having reasoning out and writing out in words what your thought process was is actually solidifying the understanding. So I think it may serve a purpose in certain cases. So unless we see what actual context the problem appeared in, might be hard to comment on that.
Right. Let's go to Kathy in Waukesha. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I just want to say that I'm a 4th and 5th grade classroom teacher teaching math.
Oh.
And so many things that you're saying, the school district is supporting and helping guide us into doing problem solving, building relationships, using manipulatives, just a number of things you said. So I love what you're saying. And yet I worry of what you're saying in the grade that I teach, 4th and 5th, is where it starts to really break down. So I'm hoping, if you have any other insight for me that I could take back to my classroom to improve my skill.
Shubhangi.
Sure. I think that 4th, 5th grade is exactly what she's talking about. That's exactly where the bottleneck is, or problems can start to appear. And one of the things is to make sure that the concept of fractions is really well taught, and that it's not something to be feared. Fractions is not something very different than 2 or 3. It's the same thing, except I think the concept of unit is very important. So if I say 2 apples, then apples is my unit. If I say 2/3, then I have 2 copies of 1/3, and 1/3 is a unit. So I think that usually allows people to move forward in fractions if you stress the concept of a unit.
Now, that's interesting. Now I learned something. I learned something about math on this very program. I feel better already. That's great. I think the people ought to just take this, who really got lost somewhere along the way, that maybe your program would be good for people like me, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Is that helpful, Kathy? Kathy? Well, I assume it is helpful. And what about the instruction, Paul, of people who are math teachers? Are we all on the same page? I've heard that there are a lot of different models around for teaching math. Is that true, and should that be the case?
Well, every instructor is going to be a little different. I think for some topics, I think certain... You expect your whole audience to be at a certain level. If you're teaching differential equations, it's a totally different thing than teaching 4th graders fractions.
Mm.
There you have to, mm-hmm. I mean, it's you have to work with each individual, and they're going to be at quite a wide variety of the preparation level. So I don't know what else to say, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Thank you both very much. Congratulations on what a nice award for you. And believe me, after meeting you, I can see why you have received it. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Paul, for being with us.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah. And their book, Developmental and Intermediate Algebra Combined Text, if you go Google Dr. Shubhangi Stalder, S-T-A-L-D-E-R, Dr. Paul Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N, you'll be able to find this and learn about their method of presenting material that is really working, that's really successful. Congratulations to Shubhangi, who's receiving an honor this Friday at the UW System Board of Regents, one of three annual Regents Teaching Excellence Awards. And she is at UW Waukesha. And we thank Paul Martin, professor of math at the University of Wisconsin Marathon, for being with us as well. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour. And thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio with news of a verdict in the Boston Marathon case and more. So we'll be with you tomorrow.